Record. Okay, we are recording. Great. So here we'll just go over some historical players and kinds of research questions that got tropical ecology its beginnings, its start. We'll look at diversity and unique attributes of the tropics, and we'll start to get into climate and life zone concepts, although I think this will take us into Wednesday's time a little bit. So Charles Darwin is probably not somebody you would expect to associate with tropical ecology, but it's he actually gained a lot of inferences looking at and through travels through different areas of the tropics. Another famous biogeographer and explorer is Charles Darwin's contemporary, Alfred Russel Wallace. These two guys really made important strides in looking at tropical systems and trying to just the start of figuring out what was out there. And keep in mind that like scientists at this time did not originate, they were not based in tropical countries. Scientists in the age of exploration were all coming from areas from the temperate zone, from Europe, from all these places that were extra tropical. So they would go on these explorations and bring back these things that no one had ever seen any the likes of before from their collections and from these expeditions that they did. And they're kind of putting together these patterns of biodiversity, not by being within the, not from this other kind of perspective, from a perspective of a temperate, a temperate origins perspective. But Charles Darwin and Wallace, Alfred Wallace, were major players in the first kinds of ideas that about the importance of the tropics and other kinds of biogeographic patterns that occurred within across the globe. Someone else you may have heard of is a man named Alexander von Humboldt. He was also a major player in the exploration. So he was a naturalist and responsible for kind of putting a lot of ideas together of basic patterns and large scale patterns as they play out across the globe. I really like this picture because this is from von Humboldt's notes where he was exploring this area of Ecuador. Does anyone know what this drawing is of? It's a mountain. But does anyone know where it is besides Ecuador? Has anyone ever heard of Alexander von Humboldt before? No, not really? Okay. Well, he did a lot of this exploration. And one of the reasons I really like this picture here is this is Cotopaxi. It's a mountain in Ecuador. And it was it's an exploration of species distribution. So all these like names, all these things that are written on the side of the mountain, those are his notes of all the different kinds of species that he encountered at low elevation, at mid elevation and going up the side of the mountain. So he was really looking at these biogeographic patterns in the tropics and was one of the first to do so. One of the cool things you'll notice is that there are lots more names here at the base of the mountain than there are at the top. So we're kind of seeing these sorts of diversity gradients played out just in the capturing of species across space in von Humboldt's notes. So he's often referred to as the founder of biogeography. He led these kinds of expeditions through South America from places like the Orinoco River in South America to high Andes. He also looked at kind of the complementarity of the South American and West African coastlines and suggested, which was kind of crazy at the time, that these two continents could have been joined. So he was one of the first people to kind of suggest the continental drift may have been a mechanism that plays a part in the shape and the movement of land masses. Humboldt also put together these really cool patterns of floristic belts. He coined that term, floristic belts. And this goes to thinking about how we define different kinds of biomes across the globe and what makes the tropics what they are. So he kind of coined this term of the life zone concept. The different life zones are governed by patterns of broad climate patterns like temperature and precipitation. And through all these different travels, he discovered all kinds of species, including this really weird bird called the oil bird. This is a species that you'll only find in South America and the lowlands. Or I guess it occurs in Central America too. It's got like a tropical distribution. It's just a very strange species that resides in tropical caves. It's largely frugivorous. It's just one of the kind of crazy things that among species that are, you know, being discovered with tropical exploration. And just to kind of put this into perspective, like thinking about exploring the tropics in the 1700s and 1800s, like this is a life risking kind of endeavor. This is not something that you do, you know, you don't, you have to take a ship there. You have to, you know, you're really at the edge of, you know, you're using different kinds of maps and compasses to navigate your way through river systems and unknown and uncharted areas. We had much less information about, you know, the shape of the continental perimeters at this point in time. And anybody coming from these different places outside the tropics were exposing themselves to all kinds of things like malaria or Chagas disease or all these things that are associated with high biodiversity in the tropics, including lots of the diversities of pathogens too. So it's really kind of cool to read the accounts of explorers and major players in the tropics and what they had gone through in order to try to document and understand what occurred in tropical regions. Okay, so what makes the tropics unique? Let me pose this question to you guys in the chat. So what's special about the tropics? What do you guys think of? What makes them different than anything that we find up here in Canada? Yeah, so lots and lots of species, right? They're extremely diverse, they have high species richness, similar climate year round, exactly, right? So they have less seasonality, less temperature variation. Island habitat separation of mainlands, yeah, okay. But right, so many of you have already triggered on this diversity, right? This is what explains the tropics or defines the tropics. They're colorful, and there's lots of solar radiation, good. So if we think about some of the features of tropical forests that make them unique, yeah, the diversity is a big part of that. But part of that diversity is related to not just the number of species, but the number of things, the number of habitats that are there. So that diversity is reflected not just in how many different kinds of organisms, but how many different kinds of habitats there are too. So let's kind of look at different structural features of forests that in the way that tropical forests harbor things that we just don't see counterparts for in the temperate zone. Things like trees that are just covered in epiphytes. So plants that grow on other plants and plants that grow on the leaves of other plants, epiphylls and epiphytes, giant lianas or vines that occupy trees in the forest. These are kinds of structural features of forests that we just don't, in British Columbia, we do have lots of mosses and epiphytes, but not to the extent of what we would see in the tropics. Other kinds of things like palm trees, right? Palm trees are, it's a family that's largely constrained to the tropics. Things like tree ferns. We have lots of ferns, but not the kinds of ferns that grow into the shape of trees, but those are also things that we would find in a tropical forest. Things like strangler figs. Strangler figs are certain kinds of trees that start as epiphytes. They begin as epiphytes and then they actually grow up and they grow down and begin to strangle their host tree. So we have cases of increased parasitism, including parasitism in plants with these strangler figs. So this is a picture of a strangler fig that is quite old and through all these different kinds of small vines that have since grown into major parts of the tree, it has cut off, it's strangled the tree, its host tree, and has become its own living unit. So other kinds of things that make the tropics unique are, if we look into just the fig trees, just these strangler figs, those species, those strangler fig species promote diversity by having lots of different kinds of interactions, by facilitating different kinds of interactions that occur across other species. So lots and lots of birds and mammals consume fig fruits. They depend upon fig fruits as a major resource in their diets. Dan Jansen, a prominent tropical ecologist, said, who eats figs? Well, everybody eats figs. It's a great resource that's widely available across the tropics for lots of mammals and birds. But there are also kind of these other systems that have evolved within figs and strangler figs, including highly co-evolved systems between fig wasps and fig species, where the whole pollination mechanism occurs through specialized pollinators of fig wasps that have this very elaborate life history cycle of putting eggs into the figs and having the eggs develop and then hatching out. So there's a lot of opportunity for speciation and radiation that's based on these kinds of specialized interactions that we don't really see the equivalents of in tropical areas. Yeah, if you've ever been in the tropics, one of the coolest things to do is to climb a fig tree. Will says hollow strangler figs are really cool and a bit creepy. Yes, they are. So if you go back to this picture, sorry, I'm like going the wrong way here. What will happen here is the strangler fig will kill the host tree, and that host tree will rot. And so it leaves this big empty space. So there are lots of great old fig trees that you can actually climb up the middle of the tree to, you know, and they're a little bit creepy, but yeah, it's a really kind of cool phenomenon that happens in tropical forests. Okay, so other kinds of cool things that you'll see in the tropics that you won't see anywhere else include things like leafcutter ants. These are different kinds of ant species that they harvest leaves from trees, and they farm the leaves to feed, they feed the leaves that they harvest from trees, and then they feed those leaves to a fungus that they farm. And then they eat from the fungus that grows within these giant leafcutter ant mounds. So, it's a really cool system of multiple kinds of interacting players between the ants and the fungus, and then all the different kinds of leaves that they're consuming from the nearby forest. So you have these kinds of foraging parties of ants that go out, and they'll have trails of ants going up and down trees and bringing back leaves to feed the fungus. There are lots of things around the big leafcutter ant nest where anything that's not consumed or is like rejected by the fungus that the fungus just doesn't like, maybe has lots of tannins in it or something that it can't digest, then it gets disposed of in these trash piles that occur around the leafcutter ant nests. Leafcutter ants are not very particular necessarily in the kinds of things that they consume. So if you're camping in the forest near a leafcutter ant nest, you're likely to have parts of your tent or parts of your rain fly or rain gear or plastic bags. They love that stuff. So they actually try to cut all those little pieces of plastic and feed it to the fungus, which then gets rejected because the fungus can't consume plastic. So we've lost lots of material, camping material, to leafcutter ants. So that's one unique feature of the tropics and one of the things you have to kind of contend with if you're working in the tropics. Other kinds of things are like these termite mounds. These are big globules of kind of mud and things that are put together, but they form these termite mounds and nests where termites are, but other kinds of things can use those, like these trogons. Many trogons actually nest within termite mounds, and they create cavities, and the soft shell of the termite mounds allows them to excavate a cavity within this. So other kinds of things that you will see as you walk through tropical forests. So specialized multi-species interactions, that's what the tropics is full of. And this kind of idea that diversity begets diversity, as we'll be exploring more and more in the course. This is a favorite kind of topic with a unique feature of the tropics, and these are army ants and all the species that are associated with army ants. So this is what you might see on the floor of a tropical forest if you were to happen upon a swarm of army ants that's moving and foraging across the forage floor. the forest floor. So army ants have these kinds of routes that they go in these big swarms. And as they're proceeding across the forest floor, they're scaring up all these insects that are basically fleeing for their lives to not get captured by the army ants. While there are lots of other kinds of species that are waiting nearby around surrounding these army ant swarms that are opportunistically feeding from the insects that are trying to escape. So if they escape the ants, they may not escape all these other kinds of bird species that are waiting for things to fly up out of the path of the army ants. It so turns out that there is a group of specialized birds. These are called ant birds, but not because they're feeding on the ants themselves, but because they're feeding from the army ant swarms and the insects that they scare up. But there are instances of high specialization here where many of these species are obligate army ant followers. That means that they get 100% or nearly 100% of the food that they consume are coming from these army ant swarms. You have groups that forage in these small family groups. They communicate between species. They form mixed species flocks. And Jenny can tell you a lot about these kinds of interactions. But in this particular case, they are basically working in unison, multiple species together, working in unison around these this mobile foraging unit in the forest. Jenny, do you want to add anything to this? This is kind of your jam.
Yes. So just to add up to this, so mixed species flocks are one thing that is, I think it's what make me study biology, what make me fall in love with the tropics. I wasn't planning to be an ornithologist or study birds until I saw this. And so you have an idea when you see, if you live in Vancouver or where you, wherever you are right now, you will see these big flocks of animals moving together, birds, for example, crows that cross Vancouver, and those are really neat. But imagine that instead of being all black birds together, same species, you see all these species that are different colors, different shapes, all moving together and communicating. So one unique thing of this is if you see in the faces of these birds, skin is bare skin. They don't have feathers in there. So you see this weird red and blue. So I guess they're avoiding the ants to them. They're quite, those ants are no easy to handle. But this is one of the unique things that you will see in the tropics and enjoy. I do study this, and I've been studying this for, not this particular system, but something similar for the last 8 years or so. And every day that I think in the tropics, this is what I think of.
Very cool. Yeah, these are really spectacular systems and something that we can only find in the tropics. So specialized multi-species interactions, sorry. Okay, cool, thanks, Jenny. Okay, but kind of going back to this theme of what makes the tropics unique, you guys hit right on this right away, that there are lots of species, lots of diversity. And just one way of kind of visualizing this is that even within groups of species, we have lots of variations of a theme. So for example, these are just two different pages that are taken from different field guides. So this is a field guide of North American species where we have three kingfisher species, the green kingfisher, the ringed kingfisher, and the belted. And they have different male and female phenotypes, right? Different phenotypes between male and female. But if you look at Peru, you have lots more kinds of kingfishers. And consider this is also within all of North America, we have three species, but this is within only the country of Peru that we have all of these different varieties of kingfishers, ranging from pygmy kingfishers, these little really small, cute guys, to giant belted giant Amazonian kingfishers with big bills. So variations on a theme, there are lots more variations that occur within the tropics. So we have more instances of speciation and radiation in the tropics compared to the temperate zone. If we extend that perspective of kingfishers to the old worlds, we see even greater diversity, even greater variations on a theme. So the Afrotropics has 15 species of kingfisher across these different countries. And these are pages taken from the birds of East Africa, including Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda, and Burundi. So we can start to ask questions about, centers of diversification for different groups. where did groups of species originate, and how did they radiate, and how did they diversify? And what kind of role did the tropics play in this process of diversification? We can start to kind of gather information and make observations based on simple kinds of things like